You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. It's just a solo pod today, but we're starting off our off-season schedule strong with an interview with pitcher list writer and manager Matt Heckman. Before we get into it, though, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you could send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we are talking with pitcher list manager and writer Matt Heckman today. Matt, welcome to the show. How are you doing? And could you introduce yourself to our listeners? What do you do at PL, and maybe a bit of your history with fantasy baseball?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on today. So I've been playing fantasy baseball for a while now. I'm about to turn 25. So, I mean, I started probably back when freshman year of high school, I want to say. So it's been a long time. Really started to get into the writing end of it at the beginning of end of 2021, beginning of 2022. I started with a lesser known group, Prospects Worldwide. They kind of awesome guys over there that they focus more on the lower level, less fantasy baseball, more just baseball in general, prospects, that kind of thing. Joined FanTrack as a staff writer, worked with Chris Clegg, Eric Cross, when both of them were with FanTrax. And then when Chris briefly came over to PitcherList, he actually asked if I wanted to join the Dynasty team. So I joined then. Chris had to step away, and now I'm actually managing the Dynasty team. I'm a Philadelphia Phillies fan, so knock on wood, things are going pretty well there right now. It's been an exciting time. Was a lot of fun. That's when I first got into baseball, when they were really, really good. So 07, 8, 9, 10, the Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins era. And then things got a little bit dark for a while, but they're back now, and hopefully they can finish it off this time.
Yeah, we're recording this on Sunday, October 22nd, and you guys currently have a 3-2 lead in the NLCS, so that's kind of fun. And it feels like Kyle Schwarber, he's one of, you know, our personal favorite fantasy baseball players on the podcast, and he's just lighting it up from the plate.
He is on another level right now. I mean, he gets into these runs where you can't throw him anything in the strike zone, or he's going to hit it almost 500 feet, it feels like. Yeah, so that home run he hit last night, so that game five for the listeners, that home run was insane that he hit, and then Harper almost hit one to the exact same spot.
Right, so yeah.
That was pretty cool.
That's fun. Yeah. So with Dynasty, you know, we talk a lot about redraft leagues on this podcast, but Dynasty is something that, you know, I've had a little bit of experience in. I've been part of like a Dynasty league for the last 2 years. But what about Dynasty fantasy baseball kind of appeals to you as a manager?
So I feel like it's a little less luck oriented. There's obviously all sorts of luck involved in fantasy sports. Your guys get hurt, something drastically changes in a player's profile. There's not a whole lot that you can do about that. You can draft, you can scout to the best of your ability, but at the end of the day, there's only so much you can control, and that's what makes it fun and exciting. But at the same time, Dynasty, you can build these teams from the ground up. I like the ability to also find players before everybody knows about them. You can find a guy in low A that 95% of the Dynasty community hasn't heard of. You can add them to your Dynasty team, and in 5 years, they could be a rising star leading you to championships. I just feel like you have a little bit more control over the situation than you do in a typical redraft league, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know with my first Dynasty league, or only Dynasty league, and we did our startup draft, and my initial plan was like, I'm just gonna draft like old guys, like really old guys, and then really young guys, mm-hmm. and just hope that the old guys work for a couple years and then they can get replaced by the new guys. But unfortunately, all my old guys are getting injured, so I've been basically out of my control tanking for the last 2 years, but it is what it is. And then all my young guys got hurt, so it is that. Yeah. Yeah, O'Neill Cruz and Shane Boz for me, man. Those were
Next year.
Yeah, exactly. Next year.
That's the other thing. You can always kick the can down the road. I like if you play a normal redraft league, especially a roto league, a season long roto without head to head, you could be out of it by the middle of the season. Right. And so, at least if you're playing a dynasty league, you're never really finished. You always have something to compete for, something to do, something to work toward in the future. So, I mean, the first dynasty I got into is Atenu. I don't know if you're really familiar with any Atenu, but that was the first one. That's the kind of unique, really unique niche of dynasty.
Yeah, and that was your first one?
Yeah, that was the first dynasty league that I actually played in. So it was an adjustment. I felt like it was a lot of fun because you still get that dynasty aspect of it, but I didn't get as much prospects oriented as I wanted. With only 40-man rosters and such an emphasis on current year, it didn't give me as much prospect exposure as I was hoping for. So then I got really into the other aspect of dynasty.
Okay, cool. Well, we're here to talk about your article, but technically actually a bunch of the people in the Dynasty writing group kind of helped out with this. Shout out Martin Sikulski and Jake Mache, who also contributed to this article. Anyone else also helped with writing the Pitching Prospect to Debut article?
Yeah, Steve Dwyer also.
Steve Dwyer, that's right. Robust.
Yeah, that nice. Really contributed and made it what it was.
Yeah, so if you're at all interested about, you know, young pitchers that are up and coming and maybe kind of a little bit off the radar, definitely recommend checking out, yeah, this Every Starting Pitcher Prospect for Fantasy Baseball 2024 article from Matt and the Dynasty team. I counted, I believe you guys wrote about 149 pitchers here. Which is a lot, and you know, they range from guys who are in single A who have already technically debuted in the major leagues. A lot of names here. For people who are, you know, let's just say more interested in redraft leagues, how would you recommend approaching this article? And like, what are some things that, you know, even managers who only participate in redraft leagues can get from understanding, hey, there's this guy in double A who's could debut in like June for, let's just say, the Reds. How is this article helpful for like off-season prep?
So off-season prep, it's a little bit, you don't have to read every player from every single team. Like you said, there are like almost 150 players included in this article. It would take a long time. And I mean, if you want to sit down and read it, I encourage everybody to, because the work that the team did is just incredible. But if you're looking for more focus on redraft and what you need to know now, I would encourage people to just skim through the article, really read maybe the overview and the conclusion for each player. And from there, either on a piece of paper, an Excel sheet, whatever, you can start a list of exactly who you need to be keeping an eye on. There is a loose kind of rough estimate ETA for each player as well, right under the conclusion. So you can see, okay, if I'm playing in a redraft league, these are the players who are going to debut in April or May. And those are some of the guys that you should probably have on your radar right from the start. Whereas if you're waiting and you see a guy with a June ETA or a July ETA, maybe it's somebody that you just write a little note on and say, pay attention to this. We have the stash list articles that come out weekly during the season, but they don't go in depth about a player's arsenal. So maybe if you know a guy that has a lot of upside, I'll use Cade Horton as an example from the Chicago Cubs. He's rising up fast. He's not likely to make his debut super early in the season, but he's definitely somebody that has a chance and the upside to be a legitimate fantasy star up on the mound. So maybe you just keep an eye on him, and then come May when you want to read a little bit about more about what he's throwing and his different skill set, you can check this article back out and then get some more in-depth knowledge of, is this guy somebody that's just a streamer? Is he going to be a fantasy star? That kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely seeing this as a resource that you can use for the entire 2024 season, I think that's pretty cool. Because, yeah, you guys do break down, you know, every single pitcher's pitches. And even though there might be some development over, you know, let's just say the next half season, a lot of times the same stuff is, you know, similar when they get called up.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was the main goal because I was talking to Nick a little bit, Nick Polak, about this before the article was even written. And it was how deep did we want to go? And even if a guy might not have a fantasy impact, he, and I agree, still felt it was important to include those kind of guys because the dyn or the fantasy baseball community needs to know, okay, this guy just got called up and he might have pretty decent AAA numbers, but he doesn't actually project to be a real fantasy standout. And so you wouldn't waste picking him up or waste a waiver claim on picking him up or FAB or however you want to put it.
Yeah, as a Twins fan, I can already recommend just don't bother with picking up Simeon Woods Richardson. It's not gonna be pretty. But speaking of guys who have some major league experience, like Woods Richardson, there's a bunch of guys here on this list that do have experience at the MLB level. You know, Sawyer Gibson Long, Chase Silseth, Mason Miller, one of my personal favorites, Emerson Hancock. All these guys, you know, they technically debuted last year, but they're still kind of considered prospects just because, you know, they didn't get to the requisite number of innings. Out of all the guys that you looked at in this article, maybe who are three pitchers that, you know, they technically debuted this past season who might get end up overlooked because their 2023 just wasn't that amazing.
So I think the first one for me is going to be Connor Phillips. I had the chance to actually write about him because I took the two centrals on the American League and the National League. And he's a pitcher with the Reds. He came over from Seattle, joined the Reds organization. He's always posted really, really good strikeout rates throughout the minor leagues. Now he's got two really good pitches in his fastball and slider. So that's why I think he's important that fantasy, or it's important that fantasy managers kind of keep him on the radar. He's trying to work on a curveball. It's got a lot of movement and it just hasn't fully developed yet. So I think the inclusion of a third pitch there could really take him to the next level. He doesn't have the best command. He posted a 6.97 ERA in 20.2 major league innings this year. So obviously there are concerns there, but if you want to shoot for somebody with upside, he's got a lot of IVB on his fastball, sits in the upper 90s. His slider is pretty wipeout. Generated a 48.9 whiff percentage on that slider in that brief minor or major league stint. So he's just the first kind of guy that I would be keeping an eye on if you're looking for somebody.
Yeah, and so you mentioned IVB, that's induced vertical break, right? And so
Yes.
how does that help that fastball? I mean, because we see upper 90s, we immediately kind of assume, oh, that's got to be, you know, a good pitch, blow by batters. But how does that good induced vertical break help that pitch?
It gives it rising action. So when it comes out of the hand, it kind of sails up and over bats, which helps. It creates some deception. It's not flat. When the ball is coming in flat, if you're a good fastball hitter, you can get on top of it and you can actually drive that high fastball right out of the ballpark. So you see that a lot. It happens even with Gerrit Cole sometimes. I mean, he's got a great fastball, great metrics on his fastball. But sometimes at the top of the zone, hitters can demolish it. And so when you lack that good induced vertical break, sometimes it prevents your fastball from playing up as well as it could with that velocity.
Okay, good to know. Who are some other guys that you think might be worth taking a stab at?
So AJ Smith-Shawver is another one, Atlanta pitcher. He kind of flew through the minor leagues this year. He started at high A. He had only ever pitched like under 80 innings in his major league career with the Braves. And then Smith-Shawver came up. He dominated A, high A, double A, triple A. The Braves called him up and things did not go great. He posted a 4.17 ERA, a 6.69 FIP, or 4.26 ERA. Sorry about that. 6.69 FIP. The strikeouts went way down. The walk rate went way up. And the stuff just wasn't as good. Sorry if you hear something running in the background. That's my cat, who, of course, is deciding to be a freak right now while we record this show. But 4.26 ERA, 6.69 FIP. The stuff just wasn't as good as what we expected to see in the minor leagues. But he's still only 20 years old. He really had no time to develop. He threw 7 innings in high A. Or 14 innings in high A, 7 innings in double A, 41 innings in triple A. He hasn't spent any time in the minor leagues, and then he was thrust into this major league atmosphere. So I think there's still a lot of development that can happen with AJ Smith-Shawver that could really help him to take the next step. And people shouldn't be too worried about such a small 25-inning sample size at the major league level.
Yeah, especially it's interesting because that Atlanta team, even though you think of, really high power pitching in terms of, Spencer Strider, Max Fried, they were dealing with a lot of injuries this season. And they were calling up guys left and right. I think of Dylan Dodd, had a cup of coffee up, and then he got hurt, and so they were like, oh, well, who else could we pick up? And yeah, Smith-Shawver, I know everyone was kind of excited about him, but it's, yeah, kind of crazy to think he's only 20 years old. So, yeah, definitely still a lot of development in that arm. That is possible. So that's a really solid pick. I didn't even realize he was that young. I knew he was young, but not 20 years old.
His ascent through the minor leagues was insane. Like you said, they dealt with so many injuries, and that kind of forced him up, and he looked dominant in the minor leagues, but he didn't get a chance. You usually won't see a pitcher until they're 21, 22, especially with more inning buildup in the minor leagues. And so to see him come up and 4.26 ERA and a small sample, that's not bad anymore. It's not 4.26 ERA is fairly close to average. So I
It's a
expect,
quality start, I'm pretty sure. So,
right? Yeah. So he was fine. People see that though. They see the 6.69 FIP. They see his strikeout rate drop way down in that brief sample size, and they'll probably be a little bit scared off of him in the future. But I'm still in on him. He's an extremely talented arm and a good organization too that you trust. So I feel like that always helps.
right. Yeah, good development for sure in Atlanta. Okay, final name.
All right. This is one that I struggled to pick because I really loved him going into the season. And then he was a pretty massive disappointment. Owen White from Texas. He's a right-hand pitcher, 6'3", 170. His fastball doesn't have the best metrics on it, but he's got a big array of secondary offerings. He was really, really good in the minor leagues. Control was his big thing, and that kind of took a random step back this season. His walk rate skyrocketed in AAA. His strikeouts went way down. He walked as many batters as he struck out in AAA. He got a little cup of coffee, 4 innings at the major league level, 11.25 ERA there. But he was a top 50 prospect for me for a reason. He was a 55th overall pick. The control was strong. He had good command of all of his secondary offerings. And so I'm not totally willing to write him off yet. He's still only 24. He'll be 24 for almost the entire 2024 season. And I just feel like there's more there. He only gave up an average exit velocity of 86.5 miles an hour. He was able to keep the ball on the ground well. So maybe he got a little unlucky. Maybe there was something else going on there that caused his strikeout rate to drop. I mean, his strikeout rate was putrid in the minor leagues, 13.5% at AAA this year. So it's not an encouraging profile to look at that, but he's got the pedigree that makes me confident he'll be able to bounce back.
Yeah, that Rangers organization actually as a whole got a lot of interesting pitching prospects who frankly don't know if any of them are really going to pan out. I mean the top two names I'm sure people probably focus on are Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker, but like you mentioned, Owen White's there. Who's
I
there?
really like Mitch. I really like Mitch Brett. He's in Hiya.
Okay.
He was written about in that
Yep.
article. I really like him. He's got a nice fastball, good curveball. He mixes in a slider and changeup as well. The stuff is really good. So if you're any dynasty players listening out there, if you're looking for a little bit of a deeper name, that's a guy that's really high on my list.
Okay, good to know. All right, so Dynasty, obviously, at the end of the day, the majority of the people that you're going to be starting on your team are already established major leaguers. And, Dynasty rankings are kind of, I wouldn't say fickle. It's like, how do you balance, putting a, where do you rank a prospect, right, in relation to a bunch of these other major leaguers? And so I was just taking a look at Fantasy Pros. They have consensus rankings for, dynasty teams, and just trying to figure out, okay, where do the pitchers lie in those rankings? And so it looked like the top three pitchers that have yet to debut who are on that list were Ricky Tiemann, Daniel Espino, and Max Meyer, who technically did debut 2 years ago, but then had Tommy John, so he was out for the last year. Now, the one thing that's that all three of these guys have in common is basically injury concerns. Tiedemann's got, you know, some funky stuff with the elbow. Daniel Spina just can't seem to be healthy at all. Max Meyer obviously coming back from Tommy John. Out of these three, though, Spina's probably not going to contribute in 2024. So between Ricky Tiedemann, who kind of high prospect, I think believe he's actually in Arizona Fall League right now. And then Max Meyer, who I have a soft spot for because he went to the University of Minnesota, which I graduated from. So I know his game a little better between the three of these. But between Tiedemann and Meyer, which one do you think has more upside and ultimately will have like a better season in 2024?
I'm going to go with Tiedemann here. And it doesn't I love Ricky Tiedemann. He's a top 10 pitching pro. He's actually my top pitching prospect on my board. I really like the arm talent. He's showing more consistent with his velocity a little bit. He can sit in the mid-90s from the left side. Really, really good changeup. He's got a sweeper that he's developing and he's working on too. I like Tiedemann's profile, but going with Tiedemann over Meyer doesn't necessarily speak to me not liking Meyer. It's just he didn't throw a single pitch in 2023. He only threw 67 innings in 2022. There's only so much upside I feel like he's going to be able to have. We saw how careful Miami was with Yuri Perez this year, even though Perez was dominant and they were in a playoff hunt. They're going to be just as careful with Max Meyer coming back. And so Ricky Tiedemann, yes, injuries derailed his 2023 season as well. He only threw 44 innings this year. But at the same time, he's in the Arizona Fall League. He's building up those innings again, and he pitched this year. So he's going to have a little bit of a longer leash in 2024, which is why I would go with him over Max Meyer.
Yeah, I guess maybe, obviously it's only October, but do you think Tiedemann ends up making the opening day rotation for the Jays?
I don't think he cracks the opening day rotation. I think they're going to be move him a little bit slower. I think he's going to start in AAA, show that he can keep the walk rate down. You saw that kind of spike when he went to AA this year. It went up, and even in AAA in the four innings, he was walking some. So I think he's going to start in AAA, but I think you see him before June would be my guess. What's the ETA? The ETA in the article is early 2024, possibly opening day. So I believe that was Martin that for the AL East. I could see it. I wouldn't bet on it, though. I think he's up before June would be my guess.
Okay, good to know. So I want to focus a little bit on the Central divisions in both leagues for a bit since you wrote on those blurbs. And in both those divisions, we've got a couple guys who were high draft picks but haven't yet reached the AAA level. And I'm speaking in particular to Jackson Jobe and then Paul Skeens. Obviously, Paul Skeens' number one draft pick in the 2023 draft, so he's a bit more in the mind of a bunch of managers, I'm sure. I'll come in and say it as like someone who, you know, dabbles a little bit in Dynasty and knows some of these, you know, guys. I would say my thoughts is that it's going to be tough to rationalize drafting these guys and stashing them on my redraft leagues because it feels like it's going to be like at least 3 months before they come up to the majors. But what do you like about both these guys? And if you had to pick between the two, who are you taking at a dynasty startup draft?
This is so hard because prospect list that goes out at the end of each month during the regular season, the final one, I had Paul Skeens at 10, Jackson Jobe at 12. So they are neck and neck, my number two and number three pitching prospects right behind Ricky Tiedemann. And so based on those rankings, you'd think the answer is Skeens. I'm going to go with Jobe here. I was thinking about it a little more. Both of them have four-seam fastballs that they love to throw. Skeens is rated a 70 future value on Fangraphs. Jobe's is only a 60. I actually like Jobe's more right now. Skeens does not have that IVB that we talked about earlier, the induced vertical break. So that scares me a little bit if it gets flat, if major league hitters are able to do more damage on that at the top of the zone. And then they both have really good sliders. And I think Jobe's is just better, like more movement, more deception with his fastball. I think he's got better control of it right now. I mean, Skeens has only thrown like under 10 innings at the major league level, and he was dominant at LSU. So I think he's an amazing talent, but I'd rather have Jobe right now, and it's really, really close. And you mentioned they might not debut for a couple of months. More and more pitchers are skipping AAA entirely. And one thing about stashing that I kind of thought about while I was writing those stash list articles this year, I would rather stash a guy with more upside, even if he's going to contribute a little bit later. I think the whole reason you stash is to gain a competitive advantage on your opponents, to be ahead on some guys. And so stashing a guy who might be okay doesn't hold as much value, in my opinion anyway, stashing a guy who could be a legitimate difference maker, even if you have to wait a couple of months to see him.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't exactly the same parallel because he debuted pretty quickly, actually. But I remember like trying to target Grayson Rodriguez in drafts last year because it felt like the Orioles were kind of going to do the thing where they left him off the roster for just a couple weeks and then bring him up. You know, as basically not as soon as possible, but, you know, within a reasonable time frame, mainly to take advantage of, you know, the rules that MLB has set up for, you know, teams to kind of gain draft picks in the upcoming draft if their rookies do well. And so I think maybe that is also a little bit of incentive to stash some of these guys who maybe the timetable looks like a little bit longer, but because of, you know, different sort of motivations in the front office, maybe they get, you know, called up a little bit quicker than expected.
Yeah. I also don't think the price tag on either of these, because they haven't touched AAA yet, will be as high. I don't think there's talk of either one really making the opening day rotation like there was with Rodriguez.
Right. Yep.
So I feel like that really elevated his draft day price, because that was even too rich for my blood. Like you were saying, trying to figure out, okay, when is he up? Will he contribute right away? I don't think you'd have to spend as high of a draft pick on either of these arms, but I think they have a chance to be just as impactful.
I'm going to take a little bit of a detour here because, after all, you did write about the Twins, and that's my team. So the one guy I think that's been on a lot of maybe Twins fans' mind is David Festa. And I saw him play like one minor league start, and it was all right. But what do you like about Festa? And what do you see his ceiling? Is he someone who could contribute in fantasy baseball in the future?
I think he can. He's posted good strikeout rates. The swinging strike, he's got really good stuff. So I could definitely see him having a fantasy impact and a real life impact for the Twins. I think he can be a very good pitcher. His fastball is really good. He's a unique player because of his size. That 6'6" frame, and you worry about how that's going to really hold up over a full starter's workload. Like I said in the article, he's only ever touched 103.2 innings pitched. So you don't know if what happens when he has to throw 150 innings. I know that starters don't have to work as long anymore. Innings are less of a requirement in today's day and age, but I'm not sure how that body's going to hold up. Now, if it does, I think he's got a really good chance to be great. His fastball is really good. His changeup is excellent. He got a ton of whiffs on that when he went to AAA last year. So that's a good 1-2 punch. That development of his slider is what could take him to the next level. He hangs some of them. He doesn't have a great feel for the pitch, and fastball changeup guys don't typically have the best success at the major league level. They really need a third breaking pitch or a third pitch and a secondary offering to mix into that. But he's got a good, stable foundation with that fastball. And so if he can just take that next step and the durability works out, I think he could absolutely have an impact for fantasy baseball, and definitely in 2024.
Okay. Thanks for giving me some hope. and I do want to pivot to the Brewers, because I have a couple of these guys, their pitchers, on my dynasty team as well. So again, just selfishly using this as an excuse to talk about some of my prospects, specifically Robert Gasser and Jacob Mizrowski. And Gasser, you know, there was some hype maybe thinking that he might be able to debut in 2023. And then Mizrowski, there was a lot of like mid-season hype, I think, around him. And then it feels like that's kind of gone away a little bit. The Brewers organization obviously is, you know, vaunted for their development ability. You know, Corbin Burns there, obviously, and plenty of other, you know, high quality pitchers. For Gasser and Mizorowski, though, you know, what do you see as their outlook? Are they guys who, you know, will contribute in a way that, you know, we're expecting to see in terms of their ceiling, or are they more guys who, you know, maybe they're just never going to hit that?
They are almost polar opposites of each other, if we're going to be completely honest. I mean, Gasser is, he's had good minor league success. He's got deception on his pitches. He comes with a pretty deep arsenal of pitches, but he doesn't have the stuff that really speaks to his fantasy ceiling. He's a fine pitcher. I think he's going to contribute in the major leagues in 2024, but he almost feels like a better real life pitcher than fantasy asset. I'm not sure how high the strikeout rate will be against major league hitters. There's just nothing that jumps off the page when you talk about Gasser. His stat lines look good, but I'm not sure he'll ever be that difference maker. I think he's more of a streamer than he is a legitimate fantasy option for you for season-long play. Mizorowski is the total opposite, high variance kind of guy. He has electric stuff. His fastball consistently hits triple digits. His slider is wipeout. He got a ton of hype around the Futures game after he dominated. He was consistently hitting like 102 in the Futures game. His stuff is incredible, but he has no control over it. He walks a ton of batters. The ball lands out of the strike zone all the time. He doesn't work particularly late in the games, so there's some pretty heavy relief risk with his profile and some pretty high bust risk. So if you're looking for a guy that is going to eat a lot of innings and produce mediocre results, you want Gasser. If you're trying to shoot for the stars, you want Mizorowski.
Yeah, definitely looking for the guy with mediocre results. yeah, I mean that's good to know, because a lot of these young guys, right, it's, you know, they come out with all these elite stuff and it takes a while for them to kind of work through all those issues basically in the minors. And, you know, Mizorowski is only 21, but there's some stuff there that, you know, could be a little worrisome, but maybe that's something that he and the Brewers are able to figure out over the offseason and maybe still in the minors.
Yeah, he ranks really high on a lot of prospect reports. He's a top 100 prospect for me just based on upside alone. He has a chance to be an ace of a staff, that he's got that good of stuff. He's got a chance to be dominant in fantasy baseball and post those strikeout rates that you look for. You just worry about the consistency of it all.
All right, so I think one thing that's cool about these prospect lists is I think we've seen in Major League Baseball the past couple seasons, and maybe that's just because I'm paying attention to it more, we've got a lot of young guys who are making big impacts and kind of are, you know, top 40 pitchers in terms of fantasy. You know, some names that come to mind for me, Spencer Strider, obviously, Bobby Miller for the Dodgers, Cole Reagans, who is kind of a meme, but also like it's a little bit legit there. Tanner Bibee, and really kind of the host of Guardians pitchers on that squad, just to name a few. Are there any guys on this list that, you know, we haven't mentioned already who you think should be on the radar for fantasy managers, either, you know, late in drafts or on the early season waiver wire?
Yeah, so one of my favorite pitchers he was one of my breakout prospect predictions before last season and mixed bag of results, but Wickelman Gonzalez for Boston, he's got electric stuff too. He strikes out a ton of batters and he always has. Another guy kind of like Mizorowski, who the control is a major question mark there. But if we're going to praise Mizorowski and rate him highly, I think Gonzalez needs to be in that conversation. He's got wipeout stuff. He's got a good fastball. I mean, hitters have looked baffled trying to barrel him up in the minor leagues. Just filthy stuff. 2.24 ERA in Double A last year. And he got off to a rocky start, and then he was really dominant down the stretch. So he's one of my favorite pitchers. I'll mention a couple of others. Robbie Snelling is a guy that's getting a lot of praise, it feels like, right now. This is more me offering some caution on Snelling. He's got a good fastball and a good slider, and that's pretty much it right now. He dominated low A, he dominated high A, and his ERA looks really good in double A in the 17 innings, but you saw his strikeout rate go down and the walk rate go up. That scares me a little bit moving forward. So Snelling is a guy that if he can develop that curveball, changeup, whatever you want to put as that third pitch for him, he's only 19 too, so he's got plenty of time to develop in San Diego's system. Snelling could take the next step, but I feel like fantasy and dynasty managers need to pump the brakes a little bit there. And then Cole Franklin on the Chicago Cubs is one of my favorite pitchers that I found doing this article. I had never heard of Cole Franklin before I sat down and I was like, okay, who can debut for the Cubs in 2024? And Cade Horton jumped off the list because he is going to be a stud. There were some guys that had already debuted in Caleb Killian, Jordan Wicks, and then Cole Franklin I stumbled upon. And he dealt with injuries, I believe, last year. And then he was really good. His fastball sits in the mid-90s, can touch 100 at times. He's got a new slider that he's working on. He got off to a really, really good start last year, and then his stuff kind of tailed off toward the end of the season. So there is some relief risk there, but he might just be building his innings up. He's got a really good – he's got a pitcherish profile and is somebody that I feel like not a lot of people have heard of or even talking about, but somebody that I really, really like moving forward.
Yeah, I think even if you consider like team context, you know, what you were mentioning with some of these guys, specifically, you know, let's just talk about it was Winkelmann, right? Like you look at Boston's rotation, it's Chris Sale, who's, you know, a little dubious on whenever he's truly healthy, Nick Pivetta, Brian Bello, Cotto Crawford, Tanner Howard, not exactly guys who, you know, are mainstays in the rotation. So maybe, you know, someone has an injury, Rodriguez gets called up. That's, you know, right. It's, you know, just that happened. You know, we saw that with Atlanta, right? Gonzalez. Yeah, that's right. And we saw that in with Atlanta, right? Where AJ Smith-Shawver got and picked up. And I know there was, there was a lot of preseason hype, I think, this year about Snelling, not in terms of like picking up in redrafts, but, you know, think like, oh, maybe this kid's got a shot to push the major league roster, especially since the tail end of that Project's rotation, like, also a little bit work in progress. You know, they I feel like they couldn't truly figure it out the entire time, and but yeah, he's so young, there's still a lot of development there. So just definitely a lot of interesting names there. Cole Franklin, yeah, I've never heard of this guy, but just reading the write-up, it's like, oh, he's a 60 future value changeup. That's got to be a good thing, you know. Like, you know,
every pitch I looked at with Franklin, I was like, this looks really good. Yeah. This looks really good. this also looks really good.
Yeah.
Why have I not heard of this guy yet? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the one guy. I mean, there were a couple of guys that I was like, oh, I really like him more than I thought. But that was the one guy I had never heard of that I was like, he's could be really, really good and break out and take the next step next year.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely recommend people to check out this article. And you know, like Matt said, keep it bookmarked. You know, a lot of times you're going to hear, let's just say in mid-June, some random dude's getting called up for a spot start. Maybe it's worth a stream, but, you know, checking out this article and figuring out, you know, what's his arsenal? What is he good at? Does it make sense to pick him up for a stream in this case? I think that's really good advice. And yeah, 149 write-ups, just really impressive from you and the Dynasty team. So that wraps up our interview today. Matt, is there anything that you want to plug? Maybe, you know, a way that people can reach you on social media, anything coming up in terms of coming from the Dynasty team in this offseason for Pitcher List?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter a lot. I tweet a lot more during the regular season. Right now, it's pretty Phillies focused, honestly. But tweet all of my articles there at Heckman_Matt115, Twitter X, whatever you want to call it. You can always find all of my articles on Fantrax and Pitcher List there with the link. The Dynasty team is working hard, even though it's the off season. We have, in the same way that this pitcher article came out, we have one for hitters set to come out in a couple of weeks. So we're working really hard on that, trying to get that ready for everybody for the same thing. Can help you year round, help redraft, help dynasty managers just get a better understanding of who some of these prospects are. Because as you mentioned earlier, we're seeing more and more come up through the minor leagues, whether that's a result of the CBA or just players coming into professional baseball more talented than they ever have been. But they keep coming up. And so we have that coming at the end of October. We're going to focus on a lot of first-year player draft articles in November and then get ready for next season.
Yeah, if this pitcher's articles was 149 pitchers, I'm kind of scared at how long the hitter's article is going to be. But it's a good thing that we don't have to read it all in one go and instead use it as a reference because, yeah, that's going to be incredibly helpful. Yeah, again, thanks for coming on the pod, Matt. Always good to talk some dynasty baseball on this podcast, even though we focus on redraft a lot. And yeah, hopefully, listeners can check out, the content that the Dynasty team is putting out. Super high quality stuff throughout the entire year. As an editor, I tend to read the stash list articles a lot because those are the ones that I'm editing over the weekend. And those are always interesting just to know who's coming up and who's got a shot at maybe starting in the majors in the next couple of weeks. So definitely recommend people to check out those articles, even if you're not a dynasty manager. That can be really helpful for redraft leagues. So definitely check those out. And yeah, thanks for coming on the show, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a blast.
Thanks again to Matt Heckman for coming on the show. We'll be doing shorter episodes like this every other week throughout the offseason, just interviewing writers and seeing what's new on PitcherList. Now, you can find us at ThisWeekPL on Twitter, or send us your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCuh, and Lee on Twitter at Regicidal. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the PitcherList podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for PitcherList Plus. By doing so, you can join us on the PitcherList Discord and get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. There'll be plenty of chatter this week about the World Series, so come check out all we have to offer. That's all for this week. We'll be back next time with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Lee, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.